Good afternoon. I'll just stand on tiptoes, so hopefully you guys can hear me. Just go right into the presentation, because I tend to talk a lot. So for the purpose of this talk, I'm going to refer to management-intensive rotational grazing, and we define that as a system where only one portion of the pasture is grazed at a time, while the remainder of the pasture rests. In Wisconsin, we tend to have, I hate to do this, but, you know, 28 to 35 days of rest per paddock. And we can stock about one animal unit per acre per year in a managed system, in a pretty highly managed system. And these rotations can go anywhere from 12 hours in a dairy system up to 4 days in a cow-calf system. A little background on Wisconsin dairy farms. This graph shows dates between 93 and 2005. And what we've seen due to consolidation is that we've lost about half of our dairy farms in the state, and it's actually about 12,000 today due to just consolidation. Don't worry, we're still producing a lot of milk. It's just on a fewer number of farms. But in that same period, what we see is, I've just highlighted, we've doubled the amount of farms that are utilizing management-intensive rotational grazing, and it's about 25% of the farms right now are using this, and it's really good for, it's kind of a niche system, and it's being used a lot on organic dairy farms. And as we get more and more organic, smaller herd dairy farms, they're using this type of system. So I'm focusing on weeds in grass-based systems and management and control. So basically, weeds are a problem because, one, they can outcompete desirable forage and legume species. They can reduce forage palatability or utilization. Either the livestock, whatever type it is, won't want to eat the weed, or in some cases they won't even eat the forage around the weed if it's spiny, prickly, poisonous, things like that. For the most part, we have limited weed control options in grass legume pastures because you can't just broadcast an herbicide. You're having to do some sort of cultural practice to reduce weeds, and especially in organic systems where, you know, herbicides aren't used at all. To kind of give you a timeline of weed germination in Wisconsin and when we graze, our weeds tend to germinate in mid-March through early April, kind of right after the snow melts and the soil starts warming up. But then we don't typically begin grazing until early May to middle of May. So this kind of gives us this window of opportunity to impose some sort of management on these pastures and decrease weed seed germination. So we did a study in 2008 and 2009, and we found that by manipulating exit stubble height, so this is when the cows leave the pasture, we increased IPAR, which is intercepted photosynthetic active radiation. Basically, by leaving more grass behind, the canopy of the pasture is intercepting more light. And that was found to reduce burdock density in that lovely linear relationship there. So basically, we've got burdock density on the y-axis. As we increase IPAR, we're increasing canopy. We're decreasing burdock germination. But we also found that by increasing that exit grazing height, we were definitely having an effect on yield, forage biomass throughout the year, and relative forage quality. So in 2009 and 2010, we wanted to determine if this same mechanism, this light mechanism, could be used by increasing stubble height from fall. So this was implemented in fall of 2009 through the summer of 2010 on emergence and establishment of two major problem weeds in Wisconsin, Canada thistle and plumeless thistle. And then what we did this year is we wanted to determine if we could manipulate those grazing heights throughout the season to mitigate possible reductions in forage quality and forage quantity. So we had five treatments in 2010, and really this is 2009, 2010. We had three consistent treatments where we always clipped to the same height, 5 centimeters, 15 centimeters, or 25 centimeters. And then we had a focus group meeting with a bunch of local farmers, extension agents, grazing specialists, and we came up with two additional treatments. The first one, this 5F, right under the 5 centimeter, represents a treatment that one of the farmers, it was kind of his grazing management style. So we wanted to say or see how his personal management affected weeds. So this, this treatment is we grazed or we clipped, I should say, to 5 centimeters in the fall. We clipped again to 5 centimeters in that early spring, that first grazing period in May. And then we let it go back to about 15 centimeters for the rest of the summer. The other treatment that we got out of the focus group was more along the lines of when do we need to impose this management to really affect weed seedling germination. So this one, we clipped to 15 centimeters in the fall, which is fairly typical. Then we let it regrow to 25 centimeters in the spring before coming in and grazing. And that's important because that's when we think these weed seeds are germinating, is right during that first grazing period or right before it. And then back to 15 centimeters the rest of the summer. And for the rest of the presentation, I'm going to kind of refer to the 15 centimeter treatment as typical. So when there's stars denoting statistical significance, either higher or lower, it's in relation to the 15 centimeter or what I'm calling a typical grazing treatment. Methods we used, we clipped with a sickle bar mower and then removed the biomass. Basically, the goal was to change light environment. So we were able to do that smaller plots, multiple sites, as opposed to grazing where we could probably have only done it at one site. We had a randomized complete block design at 5 different sites. It was replicated 4 times per site, and plots were 6 by 6 meters. Like I said before, we established the treatments in November of 2009. We went and clipped to those various grazing heights. As far as where these farms were located, it's kind of the swath of Wisconsin where we see a lot of our managed grazing because this was a non-glaciated area of the state, so it's very hilly, not conducive to row crops. We had 2 working dairy farms and a beef farm along with 2 research stations. And the 2 research stations is where I added the weed seed. Believe it or not, the producers didn't want me introducing Canada thistle onto their farms. So what we did is we used the working farms to kind of reconcile any biomass yield differences and forage quality differences that we saw in research farms, which weren't quite managed as intensively as the private farms. So for the rest of the talk, I'm going to talk about basically Badger Research Station, which is just north of Madison. As far as measurements, we did weed counts. We did emergence counts in June, and then we came back and did survival counts in September. And then we also, like I talked about before, we measured intercepted photosynthetic active radiation, which is this light bar. Decagon's got it out there if you guys want to go look at it. But it basically just measures the amount of light above and then below and takes the difference. And as an example, the plot on the left is like a 5 centimeter plot, and that gets about 20% of that canopy interception. And then 80%, we see that with about the 25 centimeter plot is usually around 80 or even higher for light interception. And then we also measured forage biomass, and we measured forage quality using near-infrared spectrometry. Okay, so weed counts. Right off the bat, I want to explain, combine the 5 centimeter and the second 5 centimeter treatment because through June, these two treatments were treated exactly the same. They were clipped to 5 centimeters until later in June. So I just combined them and ran the numbers that way. And what we see is that with the lower clip treatments for Canada thistle at Badger, we're getting 1.5 plants per meter squared, which seems like a low number, but I wouldn't want 1.5 Canada thistle plants per meter squared on my farm. So, you know, that was significantly higher than what we saw in all the other treatments. As far as plumeless thistle is concerned, we saw that the 5 centimeter, as well as the 15 centimeter treatment, had higher weed densities than the higher ones. Franbrook, we saw kind of similar numbers, but we just had really low weed counts in general, so we didn't have any significance. So I think the take home here is that we're seeing that really it's the 15 centimeter leaving enough residual height in the fall, and then even bumping it up a little bit in the spring to 25 or even more. And then you can really go back to a more typical grazing event, but we're getting really good weed suppression with that kind of management. So I think focusing on that, the fourth treatment down, the 15 in the fall, 25 in the spring, and 15 in the summer is kind of a good point to look at. And then we didn't have any seedlings in September this year. And for those of us from Wisconsin, which maybe just you and I, we had a really wet year, and it was great for cool season grasses. We really didn't see a summer slump. I think our weeds, you know, it was a good year for weeds, a bad year for weed scientists, it turns out. So just to give you an idea of the kind of IPAR values we're seeing, these are on percentages on the y-axis. I think the most important thing to notice here is that the 2 5-centimeter treatments are significantly lower IPAR values than the higher clip treatments in April when we think these weed seeds are germinating. So we have affected basically the light environment when we think weed seeds are starting to germinate and when we can affect their germination. Otherwise, there's just a lot going on in these. As far as looking at seedling density regardless of treatments, because obviously throughout a pasture you're going to have, it's not going to be very consistent as far as light environment throughout a pasture if you've got bunch grasses or anything else. So regardless of treatments, what we saw is that we've got a significant negative correlation between seedling density and intercepted photosynthetic active radiation. So that's encouraging. As far as bottom line information, forage yield, and quality, for the most part, we're seeing that the 5-centimeter treatments are yielding more, especially in fall and in that first grazing period. But what I think is really important about all this is that, so the green bar represents a typical Wisconsin grazing treatment biomass. And the purple bar is that treatment that really did a good job suppressing weeds. And so we're not getting, for total yield, we're not getting any differences between those treatments. So basically the difference between the treatment was just leaving 10 centimeters more growth in the spring and then just going back to a more typical grazing treatment. So I think it's really important that we're not giving up biomass to reduce weed seed emergence. And then as far as relative forage quality, the lines got a little shifted, but basically the blue line represents 120, which is what we'd like to see for a cow-calf operation, 150 for a lactating dairy cow. And this is all relative forage quality values along the y-axis. It's, you know, for the most part, we see these patterns at each farm. It's fairly typical to have very high quality in May. I think what's noticeable here is that the shorter we graze the treatments, the higher the quality, due to tillering, new green growth. But I do want to mention that we did this experiment on working farms for this exact reason, because what we saw was that forage quality on working farms was not an issue, regardless of treatment. We rarely drop below that 120 relative forage quality value. And that's due to just the fact that our research stations aren't managed quite the same. We don't have the legume component. They're not improved as much as the private farms. So basically what we found was that manipulating stubble heights or manipulating that canopy we were able to decrease Canada thistle and Plumas thistle densities. We didn't have to sacrifice any biomass to do that with the 15 centimeter fall, 25 centimeter spring treatment. We did see some differences in forage quality, but those we didn't see at private farms. So I want to thank GLCI for funding me, and those are happy cows.
We have some time for a couple questions.
I must have done a great job.
Exactly what I said. Yes, go ahead.
Question, you said that the intensive rotational grazing was on about 25% of the farms in that?
Yeah.
What's the acreage or the number of cows? I mean, you said it's like a niche market, but I mean, 25% of like 10-acre farms is 25% of 200 acres. Like,
so. Oh, like what farm size we're talking about?
Yeah, yeah.
So these are farms, I would say, typically between as low as 20 cows up to 200, even more. But I'd say that's kind of the average. It's not going to be much more than that because it's just logistically really tough. So it's definitely the smaller dairy farms in the state that are utilizing this.
Less than 10% of the total number of cattle in the state are on rotational grazing, where that is the sole system of feed.
I know you didn't mention. mention any of the milk, but I was just kind of curious, did you look at any of the milk parameters or milking yield on these different treatments?
No. I mean, the only thing that I'm going off of is the fact that if you've got a dairy, if you've got a dairy cow, you're going to make sure that she's got enough forage. So she's getting enough from this. Whether or not the forage quality is good enough, that's kind of what we looked at.
Need to move on? Sorry. Thank you, Marie.
Yep. Thanks.